Hi, I'm Jerry, chapter master of a local Michigan club, the Adeptus Fanaticus.
And I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase. And today, we take a trip through the history of Warhammer 40,000 on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 4 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And I brought Jerry on here, because we're going to take a trip through the history of Warhammer 40,000. I guess you've been playing it since pretty much the beginning, right?
Since Jesus was in the Blood Angels.
That works, I guess. So what we're going to do is kind of go through it edition by edition, see kind of what the game was like at the time, take a look at the product line, and kind of see how the game's evolved over the past couple, almost 25 years now, and kind of look at the decisions that GW made, why they made it, and what kind of reactions the players had to those decisions. So why don't we go ahead and just kind of give us an idea of what was Games Workshop like kind of leading up to the release of Warhammer 40,000?
Wow, that's a
big question.
That's kind of a tall question. It doesn't really work that way, because I guess maybe it's easier to say this. Back in the day, Games Workshop, who is Rick Priestley and a couple other chaps, whom you really don't hear much about. Rick Priestley kind of stuck with and stayed. They wanted to sell miniatures. They liked games. And it was all about the miniatures. You know, here we still even hear today how Games Workshop is a miniatures company that just happens to have a set of rules to go with their games. And for real devotees of and fanatics of the Games Workshop hobby know that, you know, they have historical game systems. And they have a lot of different other things and board games they do. But back then, that's all they did. They just produced miniatures and board games. And then it dawned on them at one point that there weren't a set of rules to play with all your miniatures. You know, if you think about the hype of the apocalypse, and they said, look, we got a set of rules so that we can play with everything we own. Get it out on the table. Well, that's exactly what Games Workshop did for miniatures, just period. So eventually, after a few years, they designed a set of rules. And they designed it for both fantasy and 40K. And my passion was always 40K. So as you can see in my hand here that I'm showing you is Rogue Trader. This was the game. This was it. This is what you played. And the flavor of the game was more like a role-playing game. So, and that also paralleled what they did with White Dwarf. White Dwarf was a gaming hobby magazine. And they had the Citadel Journal, which was the hobbyist's magazine. So if you were really fanatical, that's where you could write articles, submit them, and they'd go in, and you could do the crazy conversion, submit it, and it would go in there. And White Dwarf was just about the industry. If any of the listeners, or even you, Jason, you might have heard of the Knights of the Battle, the Knights of the Dinner Table.
Mm-hmm. You talk about that every now and then.
I'm sorry?
You talk about the comic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also a magazine. It's a hobby magazine. It's got role-playing. It does a kind of complete industry kind of look. And that's what White Dwarf did. That's why people are still kind of sour and bitter that it only sells GW stuff. They made a decision at some point that that's all they would do. You know, I'm not justifying or trying to understand why they did it, but that's why they did it. So that's kind of the quick run through of how the hobby evolved. And you know, we'll get into detail, I guess, over the rules and exactly what it was like to play Rogue Trader and what eventually became known as Second Edition.
So let's begin right there then, I guess. Was Rogue Trader pretty much the first edition of Warhammer 40,000 then?
Yes, you could call it the first edition.
So is that like the first time that Warhammer 40,000 universe really showed up? Did GW have any other 40K products before then, or not really?
Only in miniatures.
Okay.
And then the Rogue Trader game came out, and that was so you could play the game. Now, it's important to remember also in those days, and then going into second edition, that you could play with any miniature. They didn't care. Okay. But they were the only game in town, quite literally. I mean, GW has, you know, back in our earlier podcast where I've said GW came up with the business model that everyone is following. This is quite literally true. They were the only ones doing this. They were kind of the Reaper miniature of the day.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of their miniatures line, were they competing with any other big companies at the time? Or were they the only really main company producing miniatures for, like, RPGs and other you know, games?
It's hard to tell. It's hard to say. I mean, I guess I'd say in today's terms, yes, they were the only game in town. But they were even still a small mom and pop shop. You know, there was like five guys. They were working with miniature producers, and they were selling and doing the marketing thing, kind of like they do now. I guess if you think of the relationship in today's terms, it was more like how they deal with Forge World. Forge World's a miniature producing arm that kind of does these books, and GW owns them. Well, that's okay. The kind of way it was. GW worked deals with other companies. Of course, you know, back in those days, the 80s and the early 90s, there were miniatures, but they weren't good. They weren't of the same quality. Mm-hmm. And it's also hard to conceptualize, because here in the U.S., it was still very much one of these niche things. You know, it wasn't like gangbusters like it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But in the U.K., it was a big deal. You know, the whole international shipping thing, international business thing, they hadn't quite worked out.
Okay. So let's start with Rogue Trader then. What year did this come out? About, was it late 80s-ish, somewhere around then?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What year did Rogue Trader come out?
Gosh, let me see. I got the book right here. I'm going to flip through and find one to copy. I want to say it came out in 87.
Okay.
But, it came out about 87.
Okay.
And it didn't go very long. I mean, the book copy print I got on this book is 92. But that's probably when this book was actually physically printed. Because when it came out, you know, it's this book. It's actually quite large. Several hundred pages. Fans today probably the Battle of the Farm mission that came out a couple years ago.
Okay.
And us real fans, guys who've been around, know that in this book is actually the Battle of the Farm. And it's actually like a 4-page brief. It played like a role-playing game. You didn't know the mission of your opponent. You had a DM who kind of orchestrated the battlefield. In fact, even in the rule set, there are random encounters, things that the GM could throw at you guys, and he could mix it up and match it up. Really good stuff. But then, around the 90s at some point, not too long after, they came up with a rule set that just says, if you can see it there, it's got the Ultramarines on top kicking some butt. Or no, not the the Crimson Fists and that classic fight when they're trying to stand off the orcs. But it just says rule book. And what this did was make it second edition. So with two books, you have second edition going on.
So second edition was really a combination of those two things then.
Yes. And and this is where, see, and people who actually go from edition to edition nowadays, from like fourth to fifth, they sit there and complain, or even new codexes where they say, oh, my army's been destroyed. You have absolutely no idea what happened when we went from Rogue Trader to second to third. And let me tell you something. There are people that no longer play this game because of third edition.
Oh yeah, I was at a games convention about a year ago. Talking to a guy, he had all his second edition 40K figures out there, and I mentioned that, you know, I had all my fifth edition stuff in my backpack. And he's like, "I'll never touch that crap. It's evil. It's like second edition forever."
It's because your army literally no longer existed.
Okay.
Like I said, you could have a Space Marine army with Eldar jetpacks flying all over the place. I mean, your army was literally what you wanted. It was literally a Rogue Trader army that was going out to pillage a planet, and then maybe you had an alien force defending it or something like that.
So let's start here. What is a Rogue Trader in terms of the 40K universe, for people who may not be familiar with that?
A Rogue Trader is a privateer, basically. He is, he's a lot of different things. If people are playing the role-playing game today, they probably have a much in-depth understanding. But basically, he's a privateer sanctioned by the Imperium. And then under these rules, under the Rogue Trader rule set, he was allowed to go out and find new planets, make new businesses. He was the only one allowed to leave the realm of the Imperium and go do exploration.
Okay.
It was whatever he wanted. He may be a Han Solo type of smuggler, or he may be truly a rich baron who is looking for pillage and looking for new lands to take over and control. And he would assemble an army. And sometimes he would have the writ of Mark and a mark of right, and he'd be able to go to the Imperium and say, look, I need a company of Space Marines to come with me. So, you know, you were encouraged to create this story and this whole line. In fact, the rule set for Rogue Trader, you know, you would just have, you would pay for like a Space Marine hero. And then you could say, well, a Space Marine hero has, you know, a stat line of 4 across the board, but I'm going to pay another 30 points to give him a Ballista skill of 5. And I'm going to pay another to give him a toughness of 6. And you could do that. And, you know, your Space Marines would be more and more powerful. Your characters would be more and more powerful. And you paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
So your Rogue Trader army, I'm getting into the game, but that's what the Rogue Trader was. He was a a rogue trader, a rogue merchant, privateer, explorer, took on any form under the catchphrase of rogue trader.
So also in terms of story at the time, was the human Imperium this giant thing that spanned the entire galaxy with millions of planets, or was it actually much smaller at the time in terms of the storyline?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
It does have this expansive, they do have the storyline of, you know, the whole Emperor destroyed by Horus, but okay. It was a little more campy than it is today. It wasn't, you know, the whole dark gothic thing.
Okay.
The storyline, you could explore most of the story, but the storyline in some of the Rogue Trader things have it really where the Eye of Terror is this random warp storm that opens and closes. And, you know, when it's closed, there's a bunch of Imperium ships gathering up to go. Once it opens up, they'd rush into all the planets that were trapped there, resupply them, bring them up to the next technology, and then rush away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where almost you were encouraged to play in these little worlds. Of course, gamers being gamers, we would always explore other things and do other the storyline. So while there was this expansive Imperium, you never really saw it. You never really did it in story. Because the story was only the backdrop. It isn't like today where, you know, we are overwhelmingly concerned with the story, right? We've got the books, the Black Library books. We've got the codexes that keep giving us more immersion. Our armies are themed now. And in fact, I would even say that this is like a psychological holdover of these very powerful rogue trader armies where, you know, you whip out a couple of vortex grenades and the game's over.
Was the humans very xenophobic like they are now, where they're like, death all aliens, kill all the mutants? Were they like that? Were they very fanatical at the time, or not really?
Not really.
Not really? Okay.
You didn't see people playing them like that. Although the book had, you know, there's like the rite of battle and all those stuff, the gothic kind of stuff is in there, but you really didn't see it. In fact, Space Marines were not necessarily the Space Marines we know today. The story kind of gave them more of a, you know, a monkish feel for sure, but it was more like a very elite warrior who was trained from a very young age, not indoctrinated and genetically enhanced, and it really kind of had more of a campy feel.
Okay, so what about the races? What races were in were Rogue Trader? Who could you play as?
Well, most of the ones you have today, you know, the Space Marines, Imperial Guard, yes, but not like it is today. I mean, it was a little weirder, a little more Rogue Trader-ish, maybe more mercenary, more hodgepodge. There was also the Eldar. There was the Orcs, or more really known as Space Orcs. And now we get to the fun ones. Of course, there were the Squats. There were the S'lan, who were lizard men of the 40K.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
And then there were... trying to think if there was some Tyranids, and that was it.
Was there Chaos?
Oh, yep. Sorry, there was Chaos. Okay. There was Chaos.
So the Chaos Space Marines, and they have demons with them too, or are they really just the Chaos Space Marines?
Just really the Chaos Space Marines. Demons you could play, but it was a little harder because they were considered random creatures.
So let's talk a little bit about the actual gameplay. You mentioned it was kind of a bit of an RPG feel. So was it designed to play like, say, a Dungeons and Dragons adventure where the DM's kind of leading a group of characters through some kind of sequence of events? Or was it really more of a miniatures in terms of how you actually just, today where you just drop your army down, your opponent drops theirs, and you fight out over some objective? What was it like?
Yes to both your questions.
Yes to both of them? Some combination of that?
Yeah, it was a very weird combination. Of course, more people gravitated more to, let's throw down our armies and go at it. But the GM was supposed to set up a battlefield. He'd make the rules calls of, well, no, you really can't see him, or no, you really can't do that because that wouldn't fit the story I'm trying to tell with the battle. Yep, it was, you know, role-playing based. The GM, if anybody's played, D&D back in the days of the Battlemaster system, when they brought large-scale battles to it, that is exactly the way it played. Each model was a character unto himself, and they all were individualized. Although you had, you know, you could move out 3 inches, you couldn't move more than 3 inches or something, but everyone moved individually and acted individually, meaning that you could, if you equipped the squad with grenades, each one would individually throw grenades and you'd have to individually resolve them.
So let's talk about army construction. Like how many points did you play with, and about how many figures did that translate to?
Well, it's been a while, but, if I remember correctly, a 2,000-point army could get you maybe 30, 40 models.
And were you broken up into individual squads like you are today, or was it more, like you said, everyone kind of did their own thing? So, like, 30, 40 models would be a lot to manage then?
Yes. I mean, a 2,000-point game would take you all day to do.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, it was a huge game. Just because of each model acting. I mean, your vehicles had their own damage charts of dreadnoughts. One shot, you might blow off an arm, and then the possibility of secondary damage, and you know, it was just really massive. I mean, you used all the dice that were invented at the time, even in including a D100. So it was very involved, very realistic, which is why a lot of holdovers to second edition really liked it, because it does have this very immersive feel to how combat may or may not actually happen. I mean, Overwatch, there's Overwatch there. Mm-hmm. Although if the both guys are really good strategists, they've got their setup, you go into Overwatch and the game would be over because no one would make a move. So that's one reason why they moved away from the Overwatch call out.
So let's talk about mechanics. The stats, the guys, I know you sent me some pictures here. Were they pretty much the same thing where you had weapon skill, ballistics, toughness, wounds, your strength, the same basic stat line that we see today?
Yes, but with a couple additions. I'm going to pull up my book here, see if I can't get that quickly enough for you. There were three new additional stats added, which were...
INT, CL, and WP?
Yes, those were called personal characteristics. Your leadership, which is still here today,
yeah.
Right? But as you can see, the movement... Well, I'll just go right over the stat line for those that can't see it, but... You had your movement, which was that first one M. They whacked that off, and in 40K, so everyone moves now 6 inches, right? Mm-hmm. Then they go along the stat line as normal, all the way up to leadership. And then the three additional ones they had were intelligence.
Okay.
I think this is, it's cool and willpower. And your cool reflected your temperament or the ability to stay calm and under control. So kind of like if you're under fire, do you break or not? And okay. Then your willpower was mental resistance. So psychic abilities were a whole nother game within the game. It was like a card game. And your willpower was how well you could resist that.
Interesting. So let's actually ask this question. So how did you play the game a lot? Did you do the RPG stuff? Or were you more about just throwing down and fighting?
At the time, I did more of the RPG stuff, because that's what I was doing at those, in that time. I was playing a lot of, Star Wars, the West End version, and so it just kind of melded really well with us, with my group. 40K was something we enjoyed doing. It was a lot of work to get a game set up, so we kind of defaulted more to our Star Wars, role-playing game. But over time, as I got more and more involved in the GW aspect, like, I played first edition Blood Bowl, which, I guess I'm a holder over there because I think that's the best version ever. And then did Space Hulk and did some of the other board games like Lost Patrol and Ultramarine. I began to like pushing models more. I began liking the 40K. And then all of a sudden the second edition rulebook came out. And that's where it really kind of took off more and more for me.
Okay. So we'll go into second edition in just a minute. One more question about the product line then. You said the miniatures existed before the game, right? So Games Workshop was basically making the Space Marines, the Orcs, the Eldar, and so on before they came with the rule set, correct?
Yes.
So what was the product line like? Was it just pretty much individual miniatures? Did you have to do a lot of customization on your own?
Yes, to all of it.
All of it?
You'll hear a veteran, some really scraggly veterans, probably like myself, and I was like this when the rumors of the Valkyrie and the drop pod were coming out. And even when they put them in the books and said, oh, the drop pod will be here in a month. I said, you know what? I waited almost 3 years for a plastic wave serpent because, you know, third edition you did. And even prior to that, we had to make everything. I mean, I'm not joking about, you know, you hear the story your dad tell you had to walk 12 miles to school in the snow. I'm telling you quite the truth that if you wanted a rhino, you almost had to build the thing yourself. Things were expensive because, you know, they didn't have the presence they do in the U.S. So they might have had a model, but you still had to make it. Those people that are still kind of, even people nowadays, you'll see old pictures on GW's website now of a hover tank made out of a deodorant bottle. Hmm. There were rules for a hover tank, and they're in there, but they didn't have the model, so I had to make it. You know? They might not have had all the different poses. You will hear people complain, talk about the left-handed power fist. There was no such animal. There was one power fist on one metal model, and you had to figure out how to do the rest of it. So it was the Wild West.
So is it all an all metal line then? Was there any plastics?
Mostly metal.
Okay. All right, let's move on to second edition. We've talked about first edition for a long time here. That's not a bad thing. how did the game kind of evolve in the second edition? Did GW just decide one day to publish this new rule book? Did they kind of make a lot of rule changes along the way and they kind of clumped them all together? How did you get from first to second edition, I guess?
Well, they just kind of, well, here in the U.S., the book just kind of showed up.
Okay.
And you know, that wasn't such a big deal. People, you know, back then, I guess maybe it's just a fact of generation. You know, we're getting, so guys like me are getting older, so we have to have more stability in our games and our hobbies. I mean, I can only have time for one now, which is my, 40K and our fantasy fixed. Though I love all games of all kinds, I just don't have the time. A new rule book show up, say, hey, cool, new rule book, I can spend some money, you know, go have some fun with my friends. And I might spend a weekend playing games, and one of which may be 40K. So it showed up, you know, people really didn't care. What it did was streamline the rules in the game the way most of us were playing it already. Like I said, most people gravitated towards, the whole army style, and that's what second edition did. It streamlined it so we didn't spend all day playing a 2,000 point game. It didn't make it so that someone could, you know, and you could equip Vortex grenades in your army. You know, balance was not there. There was no such animal. So that's actually a new thing with the last couple of years with tournament play. So, you know, you throw a Vortex grenade down, the game's over. You just might as well hang it up. You can just watch the hilarity ensue. So second edition streamlined all of this. Made it a little bit better. It kind of nerfed your army in effect because now, you know, you have to conform a little bit more to a force organization that they had come up with.
So did they just get rid of the whole RPG aspect of it, or was that just kind of still there but just in the background, or what?
Yeah, it's kind of like it is now, where you were playing a theme and your army, your games were cinematic rather than a focus of a real story.
Okay. Same armies then? Any new factions, they show up, or just the
old ones? No new factions at all. Nope. The new faction thing is actually relatively new in the scheme of things.
Now, you mentioned about the force organization charts. So did they radically change how you built your army? Or was it just, the whole idea was kind of limit the power of, like, trying to make, you know, players tend to, you know, make powerful combos. Were they trying to limit that kind of stuff? Or what was the reason for the force org charts?
To limit the scale of the game.
Okay.
Remember, GW really doesn't give a whit about balance. Mm-hmm. Because they want people to enjoy the game. Balance kind of puts you in a box, I guess I would say. I mean, there's only, if you want balance, you have to then limit the amount of new stuff coming in. You can't explore new rules, you can't do really cool stuff where someone can crush a tank in a heartbeat, which is fun to see. You know, it's cool to see what a Chaos Lord with Lightning Claws and Rage and Berserker and all the other really cool upgrades. I mean, it's cool to see what he can do, but it's not really fun if you're trying to play a tournament all day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Force Org was there just to limit scale, to keep the game playable at a certain level. When this book came out, it wasn't, you know, there was no Force Org there. It was just the second edition rules with this as an addition. And you played your army still the same way. It wasn't until, you know, this venerable thing as an Ultramarine codex came out that armies started to change a little bit. That's where the Force Org kind of concept started coming out to.
So second edition saw the beginning of the codexes then?
Yes. Yep. And it was really weird too, because you had things like weapon cards. I don't really understand. I never even still understand it today. But what would happen when when you buy your Space Marine, you have so many to choose from that all the options in the book are usually on the model, or you can easily make the model.
Yeah.
Then there weren't. So what you had to do was pay for a weapons card, and you would just place the card next to the model, so the people would know what he had.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, sometimes why we tease people about their paper armies. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess so. Now, you mentioned to streamline the rules. So, like, was it a really huge changes in terms of how the game flowed? Was it still the same scale of game with, you know, 30, 40 models and a typical
battle? No, it changed.
What kind of things did it do?
It changed a lot.
Okay.
I sent you the picture of it, so you can put that up. But right. in the rule book on the back was the sequence. In Rogue Trader, all those rules in there talked about terrain, talked about line of sight. It talked about how to do things to it in detail. Second edition kind of put the loose characteristic to it. So, you know, it said, you know.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
Okay, so, and I can read you exactly right here one of the rules, the obstacles. Basically, it says troops must surrender half their movement to cross an obstacle, which is more than 1 inch high. Includes fences, walls, hedges, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. In Rogue Trader, there were in-depth rules over what a wall was, what a hedge was, and how all of that worked together.
Okay.
So, it did streamline it very much like we have today.
So you said before like a 2,000-point battle would take all day. How long did it take in our second edition?
Quite a bit less. Maybe 3-4 hours.
Does the addition of codexes then add to the story behind the universe, or is it still, or are they more just information how to play the game? Because, you know, now obviously codexes have all sorts of cool stuff in them about the history of the faction and things.
Actually, the codexes today are mirroring the codexes of second edition.
Okay.
The third edition codexes were just shallow shadows of their former selves. Very thin, very kind of just rules oriented. These, the codexes back then even had the entire miniature line for its army. So the Space Marine codex that I'm looking at has all the Space Marine miniatures at the time in the back and how to order them.
Okay. So by second edition, was there a much larger, selection of miniatures, or was it still relatively slim where you had to do a lot of customization yourself?
Yes. Still rather slim. Okay. Even compared to today, it was very few. In fact, most of the second edition miniatures are still out there. The GW still sells them.
Really?
For instance, the Dreadnought, believe it or not. Unchanged since second edition.
The actual model we have today, is it the same one?
The mold, yeah. Yep.
Was it metal back then, or was it plastic?
It was metal.
Okay.
A lot of the Space Marines, well, I guess maybe they've gotten rid of a lot of those because I can... You know, I have some of these still in my army, and I probably could get blisters for them. But since most of the Space Marines are plastic these days, but if maybe I'll get a picture out to you and you can see, you will even recognize
them. I noticed, like, looking at some of the pictures you sent me here, the Space Marines had kind of a little different helmet at the time, too. They're kind of a little pointed and almost like bird-like nose in the front.
They are affectionately known as beakies.
Oh, well, okay. Guess that works. So what were the strengths of second edition, then, in terms of gameplay? Was it just... Because it was smoother, was that a big selling point, or?
Yeah, because it was smoother, and it played to what most people were playing anyways.
So, you want to move on to third edition, or do you got anything else to say about second edition before we move on?
No, we can move on to third edition.
So this is like basically the big mega shift that occurred that was like the end of the world event for a lot of people. What happened with third edition for Warhammer 40,000?
It took your army and put it in the trash. This is where the Force Org actually came out, the really strict one. No codexes. So you bought the third edition book, and your codex was in the back.
Okay.
If you get your hands on a third edition book, you'll see what I mean. That's where your rules were. Just very much like trying to think what happened like the orcs. How their weapons always ended up in the rule book instead of in the army book, and it wasn't until now. It's exactly the same way. Space Marines, everybody was packed in the back, and your armies were pretty scant. You could no longer have mixed armies. There were no allies anymore like there were in Second and Rogue Trader. You played Space Marines, you played Imperial Guard, you played Sisters of Battle, you played whatever it was, and that's just the way it was. The rules were much more streamlined now. Third edition, no one playing fourth or fifth now would have a problem playing third. There were a lot more loopholes in the rules, but you would quickly grab it. You couldn't go and play second or Rogue Trader.
So with third edition, was that when it became the epic scale battles we see today, or was it still relatively kind of small scale things as was the first and second edition?
Nope, third edition, you see the same battles we see today.
Okay.
Same approximate number of models, kind of a company level kind of thing, but yeah. And third editions where even GW started to have a change of attitudes a little bit. And I think I even feel the rumbling turning back towards the third edition. GW began to kind of realize that they were a, and this is me speculating, I really don't know for a fact, but GW began to realize that they were a company run by hobbyists. So they were making decisions that were probably not necessarily smart business ones. So some business people got in there and you know, it would be like the studio had a really cool idea and they'd want to do it, but they had to go justify it to the business guy. And the guy would say, well, why are we doing the new model? We already got a model for it. Don't worry about it. Don't waste the money or the research. Personally, I think that switch is coming back around the other way, where they realize that people want new miniatures. We want to see all this stuff. So they're switching it the other way, back towards doing all of it. So third edition brought in a lot of changes. The rules, I mean, the Wild West was still very much alive. You still very much made your own models. GW was less concerned now. I shouldn't say concerned. You know, the Citadel Journal was starting to die out, so there was no this hobby, there was no more of the hobby community involvement into the game process, like what the Citadel Journal provided. And White Dwarf began to become a GW only centric magazine. So this is where some of the hate started to come. But, you know, conversely, if you look at the market at the time, there were more people coming out and coming online following GW's model, so why would they support a competitor at that point? Previously, they were supporting just other people getting the word out, but now they had competition, so why bother? So they didn't.
What year was third edition, I guess? Start there. What year was it?
It was, I think it ended in 2003.
It was like late 90s, maybe?
Yeah, about, because I went into the Army and college and then the Army, and I kind of lost track of all of that. I think it was late 90s. And then it survived all the way to 2002, 2003.
Okay. So why did GW decide to make these big sweeping changes? What was their motivation? They were trying to become more of a formal business. They want more money. They're trying, like, why so radically alter your game and potentially just tick off your player base?
Well, I don't think it had any, like I said, at that time, particularly, they were hobbyists wanting to play. I think it very much, they saw Rogue Trader in second edition, saw how people were playing the game. And they said, you know what, we need to fix this because there are problems with it. It isn't the way people are playing. They've created a whole bunch of, they wanted to make a better product for the hobbyists. And in the result, you know, they broke people's armies. And that's why now today, everyone is afraid when the new book comes out, your army's just going to thrown out the window. But it isn't. It gets thrown out because players think their army belongs in this very particular niche. If you are open-minded about it, your army does not get broken anymore. People complained about the current Chaos Codex and said, oh, I can't make the Demon Prince I used to be able to make. Well, I'm willing to bet, and I've done it, if you sit down and priced out the current Demon Prince in that book, you can't build him by the previous rules. He's actually illegal. So you actually got a better Demon Prince. And to be honest, I don't know of very many people that ran their Demon Prince anything other than like the one you see in the book today. No one put demonic fire on their demon. So why would GW actually waste the time and effort to trace rules back to make sure a Demon Prince with demonic fire was balanced against a new army? Why bother with that? No one played him, no one did it, so what's the point? So you lost a choice, but it was a choice nobody ever made in the first place. So I think they took a calculated risk. They knew it was going to tick people off because no one likes to see what happened. But they did it because they thought it would make the hobby better in the end. And, you know, they were right. They made the gamble and it paid off for them.
In terms of gameplay then, we talked a little bit about how it became a large epic scale game. Were the rules getting very similar to what we see today in terms of how you resolve like all the attacks, resolve damage, armor saves, vehicles, all of their rules, are there kind of... all the foundation, I guess, the 5th edition rules were they found in 3rd edition?
Yeah. In fact, you know, I'll just hit on that. You know, the stat lines and the whole how we compare damage and toughness and how we hit, that and even shoot, that's never changed since even Rogue Trader.
Okay.
It's just the scale of the game and how complex it is, I guess I would say, in very broad senses. So, you know, now we roll 10 dice for a 10-man squad. Back then, you'd roll one individual squad member at a time, and you would then roll maybe 46 plus 1d10 for damage of a bolt pistol. today it's all very generic, very quick, very roll, very one-sided. But third edition plays like fourth and fifth do, with one exception. Close combat and vehicles and some more particular sticking points like the universal special rules are very much different. People who were coming up who remember fourth edition and maybe the end of third know of what we call the NAR and the VD and the NAR and the VAR. The NAR were the new assault rules and the VAR were the new vehicle rules. There was, back in third edition, there was something called chapter approved. GW would put out a beta rule. People could play it, give comments back, and then they would say, oh, this is now official. Or, you know, they'd put out an army list and say, do you like this army list? Do you like these models? And people could say yes or no, comment back, and then they'd make it official. So, you know, in addition, you had to have the rule book, your codex, you might have to have a stack of white dwarves, or at the end of the year, the chapter approved book with all the current chapter approved articles in it. So over time, it got to be messy again. Mm-hmm. So they came out with these new vehicle and assault rules. Those rules actually were pretty tight. I kind of liked them. And they eventually evolved to be what 4th and 5th edition are today.
So is there almost like a 3rd edition kind of Mark II thing going on there? Or is
there was. There was like a 3.5.
Okay. That's interesting. It makes things messy. Yeah.
Well, it was. I mean, I could show, you know, in my job, I travel a lot, so I'd pack an army and some stuff. And I would have to sit down with some, when I showed up to a club or a store, I'd have to say, do you play the new vehicle rules? No, I don't. So I'd have to kind of try to dump new vehicle rules out of my head and play. Mm-hmm. So this is, just as a side note, this is where I don't agree with most veterans who complain about how the game is kiddified or, you know, younger hobbyists don't really have a place. I'm here to tell you, once you have over five, or maybe even if you count how third edition played out, six edition worth of rules in your head, there's no blooming way you can remember everything that's going on. I've given up trying to memorize the rules anymore. I play. I have no problem with picking up the rule book or my codex to go look.
So what about in terms of codexes then? You said initially 3rd edition had no codexes, but didn't they eventually return later on during 3rd edition?
Yeah, they came back pretty fierce. In fact, as soon as the rule book came out, it seemed like the Space Marine codex came out. And they trickled out after that. And Space Marines dominated. I mean, they just were, they were beasts to play. I played Eldar, so I never really recovered from 3rd edition. I always got my butt kicked. And then, you know, all the codexes trickled out. In fact, Dark Eldar is still with the 3rd edition codex today. Even though it says 2nd edition or whatever edition it says on the cover, that is quite literally the 3rd edition codex. The 3rd edition game codex.
So now in terms of story, we mentioned how gameplay went from kind of smaller scale to more company and kind of more epic scale. Did they also expand in the story a lot? Expanded beyond the Eye of Terror region? And it really became, you saw this huge universe with, lots of different alien races? Or was it still kept to be focused on a kind of a small region of the galaxy?
It wasn't focused like I was said before where, you know, there's stories in the book took place in this Logan's world or these little rogue worlds. Their storyline took place more within the Imperium the way it is today. So I guess I'd say yes to your question. It was more expansive, immersive into the 40K dark gothic kind of world.
So did any of the factions not survive the transition from 2 to 3?
Oh, of course. And we all know the most famous one, which are the Squats. And then the Slan, of course, didn't make it. See, the problem was, even in, in Rogue Trader in 2nd Edition, they were quite literally mirroring their Warhammer fantasy world.
Okay.
And I guess maybe they were trying to encourage miniature sales, and they probably didn't want to spend a whole lot of time reinventing the wheel, so they didn't. But today they can. They got, you know, they've got a big company now, so they can afford to split the two. So yeah, when they made the 3rd Edition switch, The Squats got killed, and so did the Slan.
So the Squats were the dwarves, obviously, if people didn't. Correct?
Yeah, Squats were the space dwarf.
Was there given a like storyline excuse why they got wiped out, or was it just kind of they're gone, pretend they never existed?
Their homeworld was eaten by Tyranids.
Okay. What about the Slan, then? What happened to them?
We really don't know. Because I actually don't know very many people that played the Slan.
Oh, okay.
So there was not a clamoring for them to come back either. People wanted Squats back. Mm. I have to admit, the Squats were probably the dumbest army I've ever seen. and you're probably going to get a lot of hate mail for that.
What is the dumbest army you said?
What was that?
Did you say the dumbest army?
Yeah, I mean, just on top of being the word squat, they were bikers. You know, they were Harley Davidsons. It just never really fit well with me.
They were a biker gang, pretty much?
Yes, very much so. Minor, miners and biker gangs.
I thought on the Slon, because they were the precursors of the Lizardmen, correct? So they weren't actually the true Lizardmen. Weren't they more like a frog race at the time?
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to follow the storyline, I mean, it's right out of fantasy how the Slon, at least in 40K, the Slon were the first race. Okay. They achieved greatness, and then they fell. And then, you know, they achieved greatness, and then their civilization collapsed to their current form. So what is left in the universe of them at that time was just kind of a shell of their former civilization.
So I believe if you go to Forge World, you actually can still purchase Lizardmen 40K models, but they now fight for the Tau Empire. They're basically, I think they're like basically Lizardmen with kind of Tauish armor on, but that's a whole other story altogether.
Yeah.
So 3rd edition also saw the introduction of new races. Was the Dark Eldar, were they new in 3rd edition, or they had been around before?
They were new in 3rd edition.
What about the Sisters of Battle? Were they around before, or were they new in 3rd edition as well?
Oh, that's hard to say. Because there was a Citadel Journal list for them.
Back in 2nd edition you're talking about?
Yeah, kind of in this nebulous 2nd, 3rd edition kind of deal. The switches between editions were not as clear as they were today.
Okay.
So there was a Sisters of Battles army. In fact, there was an Adeptus Abaddon's army and Harlequins. In fact, I'm still very much a proud owner of a Harlequin army.
So also we saw the introduction, I believe, the Tyranids as a formal army, right? Because they had been around in 2nd edition, but they weren't like... Were they still...
They were a real live army in 2nd edition.
Oh, okay. So they're nothing new then.
Yeah, but they were the multi-color, very weird-looking dinosaur army.
Yeah, now I'm thinking about it, one of my friends has some 2nd edition Tyranid models. Like, the Carnifex looks like it's a big blob with four arms coming out of it, something weird and funky. But also, wasn't the Tau Empire, they showed up in 3rd edition, correct? They were new in 3rd?
4th.
Oh, they didn't come to 4th? Okay.
All right, let me make sure I'm right on that. I believe they may have, it's possible they were late 3rd edition, okay. But I really think they were 4th edition.
Their 2nd codex was 2006, so probably, I don't know.
Gosh, I think they were very late 3rd.
Okay.
I really think they may have been very late 3rd.
So, I guess, in terms of, do you like 3rd edition then overall? I take it, was it, liked it better than 2nd or not?
I liked it better than 2nd, yeah. I did. I actually embraced the changes. Of course, you know, I had a large gap in the hobby when I joined the army.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back, my models were being crushed in those years, you know, during storage and so forth. So to me, it was no big deal just to start up all over again.
Okay.
So I felt the pain, but I considered it pain caused by myself.
All right. Well, any other comments about 3rd edition, or is that a pretty good overview of it?
I think that was a pretty good overview. I mean, I had a lot of fun with it. It's certainly more memorable battles, because they were less frustrating. 2nd edition and Rogue Trader had some very, very frustrating battles. Because, you know, you had to figure out all the rules on your own, and, you know, of course it brought a lot of heated arguments.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're pretty much just about getting close to the end of the show, maybe a few minutes left. And do you want to talk maybe just briefly about some of the standalone board games? Were they always alongside 40K, or were they relatively a new phenomenon? Or, like, when did Games Workshop start making standalone 40K board games?
When?
Yeah.
Well, since the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a game called Ultramarines, which, you know, you and four or five other players played a squad of of scouts, and you were looking for treasure in a space hulk, and you know, you used all sorts of stuff. You could fight, you only fought your other people. It wasn't like a cooperative thing. So you fought the other guys before they got to it before you did, and you did things like rig traps to blow up on them and things like that. Of course, there was Space Hulk, mm-hmm. their best well known one. There was something called the Lost Patrol, which was kind of like a solitaire game where you played a Space Marine scout squad going through the jungle. In fact, if you remember, one of the Tyranid books came out, they actually had this board full of jungle terrain, and they showed how you could play the squad going through it, and you would have a random encounter with Tyranid models in there, right? You search their boards, you'll find it. Well, that was straight out. That's their board game called Lost Patrol. And actually, if you go to BoardGameGeeks.com, you can see some of these games that people... Lost Patrol, you can actually download, and you can actually make the game yourself.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. All right, let's go ahead. We're getting pretty much at the end of the show. So I guess in that case, we'll probably continue on with 4th and 5th edition. Probably maybe another episode, maybe check a few things on there. I know people are probably more familiar with those, but still be interesting to kind of see how the kind of whole product line shifted more towards, how 4th and 5th edition and how they finally brought their hobby centers into the whole mix of things and how that changed stuff. So I guess with that, any questions or comments, you can send them over to me at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. And of course, Twitter, tt_battlefield. And also, on Steam, Rocker Robotics. So now that I've actually got Left 4 Dead 2 and Left 4 Dead 1, if you want to play those games, let me know. And I finally beat Dawn of War 2. So now I can try some of the online skirmish things to get destroyed by people in that. So Jerry, what about your Twitter account?
At My Geeky Life.
All right. Any other comments you want to say?
Have fun. Play the game you like the game you play.
Awesome. Thanks for coming back on the show. I want to go ahead and sign off.
Sorry. All right. This is Jerry, Deptus Fanaticus. We'll see you later.
Have a good night. We'll see you guys in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.